You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Karsibayev.
Hello, I'm Mark Waltrip, the Chief Operating Officer of Westgate Resorts down here in beautiful, sunny Orlando, Florida.
That's awesome, Mark. Thanks so much for finding time to join us on the Ivy Podcast today. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background, maybe a little bit more about Westgate Resorts that a lot of us don't know about?
Yeah, so I've had a very eclectic background. I was actually born in Louisiana and grew up in Ohio and went to school in Colorado, but I left home at a very early age and spent a couple of years working in the oil fields of Oklahoma, Texas, and Louisiana. And after about 2 years of that, I quickly learned that while the money was good, the work was hard and dangerous, so I decided to go to college, and I couldn't afford it, so I joined the military instead. And spent 10 years on active duty and 10 in the reserves, and courtesy of Uncle Sam, I managed to get 4 college degrees while I was in the military, so it paid off in dividends, and also met my wonderful wife of almost 40 years now. We've been married, so it's been a very eclectic life. And then I got out of the military off active duty and went into the space industry. And I was part of the very first commercial space launch team out of Cape Canaveral with wow. General Dynamics. And I was both the pneumatics and eventually the propulsion engineer launching commercial satellites. I got recruited by David Siegel back in 1996 and took me down a completely different path. And I ended up joining this up-and-coming timeshare company in Orlando, Florida. Today we're one of the largest privately held timeshare companies in the world and a major hospitality company that's involved in over 150 different hospitality-related businesses from coast to coast.
Well, that's exciting. That's exciting. I definitely spent quite some time in Orlando myself, being based out of South Florida. Curious, that transition from space industry going into hospitality, was that a difficult transition? Tell us a little bit more about that experience.
Yeah, it was. I met David Siegel right after I met my wife over 40 years ago. He was my wife's uncle. And he had just founded Westgate about a year after we had met, and we were, maintained a good friendship and family events, and always admired him. But I having a graduate degree in aerospace engineering and being a bona fide rocket scientist, the idea of shifting jobs really never made sense to me. Until one day, it was interesting. It was actually the week after I just gotten a promotion, and I ran into David and he offered me a job, and I went home and talked to my wife, and she asked me a very important question. She said, do you love your job? And she knew the answer to that. I became an aerospace engineer because I won all these scholarships in math, and it was never my passion or my dream. I was just very good at it. And but the job I had, you would think working on the space industry sounds very glamorous and sexy, but it's not. It kind of reminded me of being in the oil fields. You're building these rockets out on the launch pads and all kinds of weather and very dangerous conditions. And, dealing with technology at the time was 40, 50 years old and dealing with the government. And so, when she asked me that question, I said, no, I really don't. And she says, well, maybe you should try something different. And I couldn't have picked anything more different. And it led me on a path to where I am today. And I look it back, it was probably the best decision I ever made. And it came from learning that just because you're good at something doesn't mean that's where you belong. Mm-hmm. And the first question you should always ask yourself is, do you love what you do? Because if you don't, you're never going to be satisfied.
Right. I love that. I love that advice. And, you're a perfect example of that. And, I ask myself that question all the time, because it's growing through career, early stage, you always choose something that kind of, you almost have to do to build up your experience, your expertise in particular areas. But as you grow through the ranks, you get the opportunities to choose what you want to get engaged with. And sounds like, you made the right decision to go into hospitality. And that leads me to the follow-up question. As you transitioned from aerospace into hospitality, and hospitality is an industry where continuous innovation is almost, you know, integral part of the success of any organization, because you have to continuously innovate from the services that you offer or the facilities that you offer and so forth. So from your standpoint at Westgate Resort, as far as building and fostering that culture of innovation, tell us a little bit more about that, some of the strategies or initiatives that you have in place that allow you to continuously innovate and build kind of this innovative solutions for your customers.
Well, one of the great things about working with a brilliant entrepreneur like David Siegel, he constantly challenges you to think differently. And I'm reticent to use the adage, think outside the box, because here at Westgate, we don't even know what the box looks like. Because we just, you know, we don't even put that mindset. There's a lot of free thinking, and it makes you rethink the entire business process. And you look at the hospitality industry, it's an amazing industry, but it's transformed so much over time. I met some of the guys that founded the very first Holiday Inns. And back then it was, you know, all about consistency of standards and brand standards, clean rooms and smiling faces. And, you know, they were the first to have you could actually use a golf oil card to book your room on. No one had heard of these things. Well, everybody takes that for granted today. Service, clean rooms, and smiling faces are a commodity that's bought and sold on the internet for the very best price. And the only way you're going to distinguish yourself is to have a much more engaging experience with your guests. A lot of people talk about experiences, but they really don't understand what really means from the perspective of the customer. And I'll give you some examples of things that we do as an industry that sometimes just don't make sense. Surveys, you know, we all survey our guests, but majority of us, one day I woke up and I realized this, we serve our guests after they've already left our resort. And it's too late to do anything about that experience. So if they had a bad experience, you can learn from it, but the way I look at our business is that we're in the business of creating vacation memories for families, and we get one chance to do that right. And if we ask them that all-important question when it's too late, you can't undo the damage. So some of the things that we've done is implemented new technology. So we have an excellent survey system that we use, a platform called Medallia, and that's great for collecting data, but we link it with a product called Kipsu, where we can actually guest engage from the moment they check in. So we started something years ago. Within an hour or two after check-in, we hit you with a quick link and says, just tell us how we're doing. Are you happy or not? Mm-hmm. And if they are, let's finally back off and let them enjoy their experience. And we might touch them with some offers throughout their stay. But if they're not, then I want someone from management to pick up the phone and call them right away, because 90% of your guest problems occur within the first 2-3 hours of check-in. They didn't get the room they want. They stood in line too long. The room that they checked in wasn't right, or there was some issue with it. And some guests will pick up the phone and call, and some will just sit there, simmer and stew, and then flame you on the internet. So we've done an excellent job of rising all of our social media scores by engaging our guests right off the bat and making sure that they start out on the right foot and then deal with things as they come after that.
Right, that's super exciting. And, you know, leveraging technology is something that I want to talk to you a little bit more about. Coming from IT background and us being a technology organization, that's always, you know, one of the main topics that I'm interested in. But to your point, what you're talking about, I recently read a book by, well, I think he's a founder of Ritz-Carlton, Horst Schultz, I believe, if I'm saying his name right. But the main kind of takeaway from that book, what really stood out to me, is building that almost obsessive customer care culture, where no matter what your role is within the organization, if your guest comes to you with an issue, you are the owner of that problem. You're never going to transfer him. You're never going to hand it off. You are to solve that particular problem. So I thought that was a really cool example and goes hand in hand with what you guys are doing as well.
Yeah, so the Ritz-Carlton, they have a legendary service program. And one of the things that they did many years ago is they basically told every team member throughout the company, you can spend up to $1,000 solving a guest problem. And so they've done some very interesting things as far as on the service standard. Interestingly enough, the Ritz-Carlton has had to learn how to reinvent themselves in this new experience economy that we're transitioning in. And no disrespect to Ritz-Carlton, but I do this thing called what does good look like? And I take our team to different properties, be it Disney, Ritz, Four Seasons. I just want them to see excellence and learn from it. And I'll never forget, we were in Mexico, down in Cancun, and we walked into the new Ritz-Carlton, and we all got in the lobby, and I looked around, and boy, it looked vaguely familiar, and I realized it looked just like New York City. So I got the team in a circle, and I said, guys, I want you all to close your eyes and just listen to me for a minute. And I said, I want you to imagine that I just flew you someplace, and you have no idea where you are. And when you open your eyes, I want you to look around, forgetting the fact that you know where we physically are, but tell me, based on what you see, where do you think we are? And they open their eyes, well, it's a beautiful hotel. It's very majestic. New York, London, LA. And I think Ritz-Carlton has now since learned from that. I've read that they've been really trying to transform. And that's the other challenge that we as an industry have to recognize. Brand standards are important for establishing Ritz-Carlton level quality of service. But from the guest standpoint, they're looking for more than that. What they're looking for is an experience. And an experience doesn't come from replicating the same thing you did in each market. And so the smart brands, and Ritz is one of them, they've learned that you've got to transform that experience and connect with the local destination. So when you step foot into a resort, in be it Cancun, Bali, London, anywhere in the world, it's got to have that local culture, that local flavor, right down to the food you serve, the people who serve you. You've got to embrace that culture and make people feel that they're part of that destination.
Oh, I love that. I love that example, because it also, I try to study hospitality industry very specifically, mainly because as we build the systems, as we build technology, I find a lot of correlation between that initial user experience as they log into the system, or if they register or they log in. There's a lot of those similarities. And from the hospitality standpoint, being, you know, kind of the front and center focus on that guest experience, I think there's a lot of points that I personally take away as I lead this, you know, like technology, you know, system developments. So that's super exciting.
Well, technology, you got to keep in mind, it's a double-edged sword. So while it's important to have that technology to move them seamlessly, one of the most important things that I continually reinforce with our team is that be careful not to over-focus on efficiency, because the opposite of efficiency is effectiveness. And the difference is efficiency are doing things right, logical, quick, smooth, but that doesn't necessarily provide a hospitable environment. Effectiveness is doing the right things. And sometimes it requires a human touch. A good simple example is we recently did a program throughout our company called Pay It Forward, where we gave every team member a gift card. Mm-hmm. And it was to buy their Thanksgiving dinner for their family, because we couldn't do our Christmas parties. And, you know, one of our executives said, you know what, we could distribute this so much easier if we just send everybody an electric QR code or a link where they could download it, and then they put that in their bank. And I said, yeah, but that's not hospitable. I want these cards to go to every leader in the company, and I want them to walk around and physically hand them to their team members and say, thank you. And by the way, if you don't need this card, I want you to go into the community and physically hand it to someone who does. And so that's where you got to be careful with technology. It's important that you use and leverage technology to create a seamless connection with your guests, but never forget for a moment that this is a human personal business, which is another one of my greatest frustrations with business school. You hear these quotes like, it's not personal, it's business. I'm here to tell you, our business is highly personal. So just be careful that don't let technology prevent that human connection.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. You can never replace that, especially, you know, in your guys' industry. Speaking of industry perspective, what are the different trends or ideas in hospitality that you think are next in line? What ideas or trends that you're currently researching? What are you mostly excited about? What's coming up next for you guys?
Well, you know, it's something we actually started, believe it or not, 20 years ago. We were the very first in the timeshare industry to go into themed destination resorts. Mm-hmm. And we didn't realize it at the time, but we were connecting with something that was really important to the consumer. They want authentic experiences. They want to be immersed. They want to be educated. They want to be entertained. They want to be excited. And I think that trend is continuing to build and grow. there's a great misnomer out there because everybody is so focused on the millennials. And I think that's a great mistake because I don't think millennials bring anything new to the table other than maybe their adaptive use of technology. But I'm seeing technology used across a broad spectrum of ages. And the reason why I bring out millennials is don't assume that they're the only ones out there wanting immersive experiences. In fact, I'll tell you as a side note, back in 1992, my boss, when I was working at General Dynamics, handed me a book. He said, I want you to read this. He made us read a book a month back then and handed this book. And it was called 20-somethings. And it was about how to lead young people at that time who grew up on MTV and television. And I guarantee if I handed you that book today and you didn't know what data was written, you think we were talking about millennials. And the point being that 20-somethings have been behaving the same way for the past three or four generations. But what has changed is technology. And technology has become more useful across a broader age group. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, what people want is an escape from technology. Believe it or not, they want to get away from the TV. They want to get away from the iPad. They want to connect with an authentic experience. And I think that's where we're seeing our greatest success. Our resorts right now, even in the midst of this COVID environment, that are 100% occupied day in, day out, are our mountain resorts, our outdoor resorts, our themed resorts, where people can get away from computers and get away. We have a luxury dude ranch in Florida called Westgate River Ranch. And we purposely built all of our luxury glamping units with no TVs. And the number one comment we get from our guests is, thank you for not putting any technology in our room. Our kids are forced to play Scrabble with us, play Monopoly, get out and sit by the fire and roast marshmallows. And I think that's really where people are going. I think people want to get back to authentic experiences.
Absolutely. And I love that example. You and I briefly spoke about that. And I actually showed that to my wife when I was, you know, because that's a constant battle with, you know, my kids are small and fighting with the technology and iPads and TVs all the time. It's, you know, building the experiences that allow you to reconnect and go back to the basics. I think that's a genius business model. When we talk about building teams and surrounding yourself with the best of the best and top talent, and for us, you know, I'm leading a technology division over IT staffing organization, so we partner with a lot of companies that they come to us with very niche specific needs when it comes to, you know, whether that's cloud engineer or software, you know, architect. And for me, it's a passion of mine to be able to analyze the requirements and the specifics, but more importantly to understand the culture of the organization for whom we're going to suggest, you know, particular candidates. So I want to get your take on kind of some of the hiring strategies that you had implemented through the years to build that team of winners. First things first, when a candidate interviews with you, can you give us a glimpse into an interview with Mark? What does that look like? Do you get creative with your interviews? And more importantly, what do you look for in some of the responses when you hear them?
So by the time a candidate usually gets in front of me at my level, their skill set, their qualifications have already been screened. They're undeniable. I think one of the most important things when someone gets in front of me is comes back to something Colin Powell, one of my favorite leaders, once said is, you know, you want to hire people that are smart and capable, but you really want to hire for the things that you can't teach or train. And that's courage, honor, and integrity. And so to me, I'm looking for someone that is a cultural fit because at the end of the day, while we're 12,000 strong, we're a family business, a family run and operated, and we carry our family values throughout the entire company. So we want people that will mesh well with that culture. We want people that are highly service oriented. And so one of our greatest recruiting techniques is our Westgate Foundation. And we actually have a foundation that raises money. 100% of the expenses are paid for by the company, by David Siegel personally. And every dollar we raise from our vendors, from our team members, from fundraising sources, go directly to the community. But one of the most important charities that supports is our David Dollars Foundation, where we actually have a fund that any team member that's hit by a tragedy beyond their control, we step in and help them with funeral expenses, travel expenses to sick and dying loved ones. And the reason for that is, yes, it's great to be charitable, but we want to surround ourselves with people that have a passion of caring about others. And I think about a few years ago, we just opened our 50th restaurant. And And I'm very hands-on involved on the restaurant side of the business. I write a lot of the menus. I run the test kitchens personally, because to me, it's very important. Food is a very important part of my vacation experience. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I got to know some of these newbies, and they asked me to do the first afternoon opening meeting. So I'm standing in front of all these fresh faces, and I didn't know what to say other than this. I looked at them and I said, listen, guys, this business is really hard work. And if you don't love what you do, you're not going to last. And it's no shame if you don't, but you've got to really love serving others. And it's also teamwork, because the guests, they don't care, you know, whose problem it is. If their glass isn't full or whatever's not taken care of, they want the closest person, not the person necessarily assigned to that table, to take care of them. And that's why you got to love who you do it with. If you don't care about your fellow team members, we're all going to fail together. And lastly, and most important of all, you got to love who you do it for. You got to genuinely care about people. Mm-hmm. So a big part of our culture is surrounding ourselves with people that have a passion for taking care of others. And we use our foundation to do that. We use our community outreach, our community programs, and then part of the interview process. You know, those are the core values that we look for is where does your passion lie? What is your integrity? What are your ethics? Mm-hmm. Because there's other things, the skill set. And look, I've fired some of the smartest people in the world simply because they lack the value system to play well with their other team members. And if you consistently do that, you'll over time build an amazing culture of people who actually enjoy working together. And think about it, you're going to spend more time with the people you work with than the people you live with.
Right.
And so why not show up to work every day with people that share your passion?
Right. Absolutely. I love those examples. And as you stated, kind of building that culture and, you know, defining your values is one thing, but actually fostering and building a culture around that, that takes time. And it's, you know, you're not going to find your A players from the get-go. It takes a lot of, you know, experimentation, takes a lot of the things, the trial and error. But at the end of the day, if you have that right vision set for everybody, and, you know, sounds like you guys are on the right track to do that, that helps with all of the, you know, the recruitment strategies as well. And a little bit further on that particular topic, what are some of the most challenging skill sets for you guys to find? And what have you done to attract that type of skill set, that type of person to your guys' organization?
Probably the greatest challenge we've had is hiring anyone at a senior level from outside the company. And that's why we worked very hard to create our management training program, our internal development programs, leadership development programs, to build from within. I told the team years ago that to me, the greatest failure is if we have to hire anybody, general manager, director above, from outside. And occasionally we have to do that, to get in some new blood, new ideas. But you know, that's our biggest challenge, because we are such a unique culture in that we're very hands-on. Everyone at every level, even David Siegel himself, rolls up their sleeves and gets involved. And so you get people from big corporations, primarily public companies. I affectionately call them the suits. And this is kind of a funny story. He's actually still a friend today, but I had the very first executive I hired over resort operations when I first became chief operating officer. And he came from a big name brand, and he had big vision and a really great guy, but he wasn't paying attention to the details. And on his last day at work, we were sitting in a coffee table, and we were going over the list of issues at a particular resort we just walked. And he said, look, Mark, I'm sorry, but, you know, at my level, I have to operate at the 10,000 foot level. And I looked at him and I said, well, I'm sorry, but that's why you can't work at Westgate anymore, because you have to operate at sea level. You have to see what's going on. And that's not about micromanaging. Right. It's about being visible, being available, being engaged. And a lot of people, if you remember from management school, the old term management by walking around, it was a very famous book. Studies have since gone back and looked at MBWA and said it was a complete and total failure, because walking around with your entourage and being visible, but not being approachable, engaged, is not enough to inspire the worker today. Right. So in my book, Culture of Success, I write a chapter called Leading by Paying Attention. Uh-huh. That means getting out by yourself, not with a gaggle of assistants, and go walk the factory floor and go walk into the back of house and sit down with a housekeeper and say, hey, tell me about your job. What's your day like? You know, what challenges do you have? And so it's finding the kind of leaders that can get out from behind their desk and add real value to their team members. Because at the end of the day, you know, we are nothing without our frontline team members. In fact, if we do draw org charts, which we rarely do in our company, I always tell the guys, if you have to do an org chart, just write it upside down, put your name at the bottom and put everybody at the top and show yourself holding them up, because you need to send a message that it's the frontline team members that make a difference, not me. I'm in, you know, even when I'm out on properties almost every day, I could be in a bad mood. I'm not going to affect the guest experience. But if one of my team members are who's servicing that guest, I've just blown a chance to salvage somebody's vacation memory.
Right, right. Absolutely. I love that quote, writing your org chart upside down. I actually made a note of that. That's really cool. You mentioned your book. Tell us a little bit more about that. What motivated you to write it? What was the premise behind it?
So Culture of Success was really started as an outline for our leadership development program I put together over 10 years ago, and it evolved into a book. But as I started researching and writing, I realized that there's this big misnomer about a leader versus an entrepreneur. David Siegel, our founder, is an amazing entrepreneur. Outside of anyone I know, he's come up with more creative ideas for our industry. But he surrounded himself with amazing leaders because he seeks out talent, and he's not afraid to hire people who are better than he is at certain things. So the book really became a treatise about the difference of being an entrepreneur and being a leader and how to learn from each other. And there are many examples of people who are both. You know, I always say that, you know, you heard the left brain versus the right brain argument. Some people say they're right brain and because they're more analytical and not creative, and that's supported by people who are more creative but not analytical. And the reality is you can be both. And the same thing with an entrepreneur leader, but you have to understand the differences. So entrepreneurs, people like to associate with risk takers, but they're really not risk takers. And in their mind, they're not taking a risk. They're people that are willing to try and experiment new things. Leaders, on the other hand, bring a completely different skill set. They bring the process, the KPIs, the structure, and those things are important, but if you over-focus on measurement, you get into this thing called paralysis by analysis. And that's where entrepreneurs disdain the leadership into the book. And I think there's a happy medium. And so the book was written to help develop our team members to recognize that we're an entrepreneurial company, but at the same time, we're a big company. So we have to learn from both entrepreneurs and leaders. And the very first chapter is, teaching your team how to be an entrepreneur. And we use a very simple exercise. It's called, what would David do? And David's our CEO and owner. And every check this company writes comes out of his pocket. Uh-huh. And I could tell you that no one in our company that I know has ever gotten in trouble for spending money the way David would spend it and thinking it through. And it doesn't mean it's always successful, but at the same time, recognize that, you know, you have a lot of financial responsibility. And if you make a decision, you better make it like you're spending your own money.
Right, right, right. I love those examples. And is your, where can our listeners find your book? Is it available on Amazon or any?
And I actually have two books. I wrote a book before that called Recipes for Success. Uh-huh. That's my cookbook with a treatise on life. But culture is more the business oriented. I always tell people, you wanna know what I'm like as a person, read Recipes for Success. If you want to know how I look at business, read Culture for Success.
I love it. I love it. Two different sides, yet same powerful message. Last but not least, Mark, we've mentioned quite a few books throughout this kind of short conversation. What are you currently reading? And what is one book that you always recommend to others and why, besides yours?
So a good plug for my good friend, Pat Williams, the founder of the Orlando Magic. He just gave me his latest book, Marketing Your Dreams. And it's been sitting on my desk since he gave it to me about 3 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
But unfortunately, with COVID, the last 8 or 9 months, all I've been reading are extensive articles and journals on how to best prepare and defend our team for this amazing pandemic that we're working our way through. But as far as books that I recommend, I would highly recommend that if you're in the hospitality industry of any state, you should read The Experience Economy by Gilbert and Pine. It was produced by the Harvard Business Press. And it's a great book that takes us through the history of the United States economy. back from the 1800s when 92% of people worked in an agricultural-based industry. There was a farmer or a distributor of food. As we transitioned into the mechanical industry-based industry, to the service industry, to the new experience economy. And I think it's as relevant as that book was written probably 15 years ago. It's still even more relevant today. And it explains in painstaking detail what the consumer is looking for in experience and how you can monetize that experience. It kind of ties back to my favorite movie in the world, which is Field of Dreams. Because I love that James Earl Jones speech at the end where, you know, people say it's money they have and it's dreams they desire. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's about. We are in an experience economy. And so if you're in this industry and you have clean rooms and smiling faces, that just doesn't cut it. Right. You've got to figure out how to engage your guests and go that extra mile. So that's actually a book I bought for every executive in the company and gave to them and said, you've got to read this book.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. I definitely made a note of that. And for our listeners, we'll make those available in the episode notes. I'm actually, I'm in my final stages releasing my book as well. So I'd love to get your take outside of this episode on some of the recommendations and things to avoid before the book goes public. Sounds like you have some pretty good experience in that space.
Well, I'll tell you, if you're writing a book, the first book I wrote was to learn how to write a book. And the second book was a little more polished. But the one thing I learned is find a handful of people you trust to give you honest criticism and feedback. Mm-hmm. When I wrote my first book, I sent it to 6 friends of mine that were published authors, and 4 of them wrote back, oh, this is great. You know, mm-hmm. One of them said, here's a few things I would change. And one just ripped it apart. And he was my true friend because he made it a much better book. And that's something I've learned from David Siegel. He invites criticism. And so if you want to be good at anything, find people that are willing to look you in the eye and tell you the honest truth.
Right. Right. Absolutely. I'm definitely going to take advantage of that advice as soon as the book is ready to go. Mark, I know you're a very busy guy. Thanks so much for your time to talk to us today, lend your expertise. It was very short conversation, but very insightful. I personally learned quite a bit. I look forward to staying in touch with you. Hopefully, maybe I'll see you at one of your resorts one day.
I look forward to it. I'll meet you down at River Ranch. You guys will have a blast.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Mark.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.